Would you use Oncotype in this situation, Steve?
I probably wouldn't use Oncotype. Actually, I would, again, try to go cheaper. And what I would use, and our pathologists are pretty good at doing this, is some measure of proliferation, an MIB1, KI67 immunohistochemistry test. If it's done well, it's really pretty reproducible. In the old days, we used to have DNA flow cytometry and S-phase that was pretty reliable if it was done in a big lab. And I think this one, being low proliferation, I'd be very comfortable. And that makes up a lot of Oncotype. I mean, the proliferation.
Suppose it were high proliferation, would you give her chemo?
Yeah, high proliferation, I would give her chemo.
Which chemo?
I would pick TC, oddly enough.
I got to say, I totally disagree with that.
Well,
because
good.
There are no data from any major prospective trials that the tests you just mentioned are validated for choosing treatments for patients. Zero, none. You can't find it. The power of the Oncotype data we have right now compared to everything else is that it has linked itself to the most important clinical trials in our practice, which are B14 and B20 for patients like this. And it's done in a totally controlled, absolutely reliable way. Please show me any data that any pathologist has generated from any specific center that shows that the way they do MIB1 or Ki-67 or proliferation or S-phase is in any way reproducible, subject to all the vagaries of testing. There aren't it. It's absolutely insufficient data. That's why Oncotype has been, I think, so successful, because we would sit around a tumor board with cases like this, and then we'd have the exact same discussions. Oh, could our people do this? Could our people do that? You know, what about the grade here? What about there? And the trouble was, when you really came down to the decision-making, give chemo or no, most of us didn't have sufficient confidence in the actual testing done at our places that you could really make that decision. And that's where I think the Oncotype really helps.
Peter?
Well, I'd like to just add two things. One is that there are many trials that have included patients with small node negative tumors. The last overview includes a lot of patients with stage one cancer and shows the effectiveness of adjuvant therapy. So I think we shouldn't overemphasize that something that's done in B20 settles the matter. The second thing is, I just want to bring some numbers back into the argument. And I actually think that we should have, and I would agree with you, that I would have been reticent about giving this patient chemotherapy, because we have to remember the 0.5% risk of fatal secondary leukemia and other things, which begin to balance, together with the other uncertainties about the long-term effects of chemotherapy, against the small amount of benefit that this woman with a grade 1, stage 1 tumor is likely to get.
That was actually one of the questions submitted. What do you tell patients is the risk of myelodysplasia with AC? You say?
Well, NSABP says 0.3%. If you look at other trials, the numbers are generally a little bit higher from most of the other regimens. They're somewhere between probably 0.3 and 2%. And I think overall a consensus number is somewhere, you know, 0.5% to 1% is probably a pretty good estimate.
Any guesses what TC would be?
I would say zero. There's no reason to believe that there's any excess myelodysplasia with Taxotere. I'd say zero.